Welcome to Bhakti Sangha Japa Conference Call. So today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Hari Parshad Prabhu to enlighten us on Shri Padyavali. So Shri Padyavali is a seminar for 4 days. So Prabhuji, are you present here?
Yes, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Guru Maharaj. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for giving your valuable association and time to all of us. So now I would like to hand over the call to you, Prabhuji. Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you so much for kindly inviting me here on Bhakti Sangha Japa Group. Thank you, dear devotees, for kindly assembling here. I am very, very thankful to all the devotees who have kindly assembled here so that we can discuss Padyavali. Previously, we were discussing Padyavali and we did sessions 1 and 2 at when I was speaking from His Grace Adi Gadadhar Prabhu's home. Now we are continuing this Padyavali of Srila Rupa Goswami. And in this Padyavali, as I had spoken previously, Srila Rupa Goswami has compiled various verses from various devotee authors of the past. And when, after compiling these various verses from various devotee authors in the past, he has categorized them into various groups or categories. And these verses are extremely beautiful if we relish them in the association of devotees. As I said, there is one important technique in relishing all these verses. The important technique is that one should relish these verses through the ears. So one has to hear these verses through the ears, and I will try to explain these verses one by one, and after explaining these verses we will try to read through the translation. But first and foremost, we will begin with Mangalacharan or auspicious invocations, since we want to ensure auspiciousness for the entire program. So, I will chant Mangalacharan. Most of you already know many of these verses. So, kindly sing along with me. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manovishram Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Soyam rupah kadamahyam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamcha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Tadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Mitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabharutute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So dear devotees, all of us must have received a document for the third session of Padyavali. I hope that this document is present with everyone. because this document is essential for reading through the verses of Sri Padyavali. So I would request all devotees to kindly go to this document, and if they have this document in front of them, then I will start our Padyavali session. I will pray to Srila Rupa Goswami first, because it is he who has so kindly compiled this collection of verses named Padyavali. Padya means poetry, Avali means a series. So Padyavali means a series of poetry, and it is categorized into various beautiful topics. And previously, when we were discussing sessions 1 and 2, I had quoted a conversation from Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada was saying, if somebody wants to become a drunkard, then all he has to do is associate with drunkards. Then he has to drink little, 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 little. And by gradually drinking little, then he can become a big drunkard. So similarly, we are here trying to drink little, little in the association of various devotees that Srila Rupa Goswami has bought for us. These are all very expert drunkards, dear devotees. In their association, we are also learning to become tiny drunkards. So, let's see the first verse which we have today in our document 3. This verse is Shri Bhavanandasya Anushtubh. The name of the author is Shri Bhavananda. Meter of the verse is Anushtubh. And Shri Bhavananda has bought a verse, has composed a verse which describes what should be the nature of the person who is chanting the holy names of Lord Krishna. Now, devotees are so expert that they can use anything in the service of Lord Sri Krishna, even negative qualities. For example, one of the negative qualities is miserliness. Somebody becomes very miserly. So, if we see such a miserly person, what can we learn from such a miserly person? Sri Bhavananda has a very good answer for us. From a miserly person, he has learned 3 things. And these 3 things he has specified in the verse. So this verse is in a very simple meter. This is the same meter as the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita. I will chant this verse. Those of you who know the meter, kindly chant along with me. Vicheyani vicharyani vichintyani punah punah kripanasya dharani va So Shri Bhavananda says, a miser does 3 things. Vicheyani, Vicharyani, Vichintyani. Vicheyani means, Vicheya means to collect. A miser always collects wealth. Paisa by paisa, cent by cent, he is interested in collecting wealth. Vicheyani. He likes to collect, doesn't like to spend. Vicharyani, second thing he likes to do is think 24 hours. How can I preserve my wealth? How can I preserve what is already existing with me? Vichintyani, and he further deliberates on how I can increase my wealth. So these 3 things every miser does. Vicheyani, he collects wealth. Vicharyani, he makes big plans as to how to preserve that wealth. Vichintyani. And he makes elaborate plans to increase that wealth. Puna puna. He doesn't do it only once in life. He does it puna puna. More and again he does the same activity. Sri Bhavananda says, Kripanasya dhanani eva. Just as a kripana, a miserly person, does with his dhanani, with his wealth. Similarly, swan namani bhavantuna. Similarly, may we do the same with your holy names, dear Lord. Every day, like a miser, let us collect newer and newer names in our collection. And once we have those names in our collection, may we never lose them. So may we always keep track of whatever new names we have learned. And after learning these new names, may we always make plans to learn newer names. So may all these 3 things happen to us just as a miser does with his money. May we do with your holy name, O dear Lord.
Yeah.
This is Bhavananda's realization about the holy name. He has expertly seen a miser, and devotees are so expert they can think of how to use even miserly nature in the service of Lord Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in Shastras, it is said that nobody should behave in a miserly way. Previously, I was quoting a verse in a previous class. There is a Sanskrit verse which says, Kripanasya Samodata Na Bhuto Na Bhavishyati. There is no person more charitable than the miser. Believe it or not, there is no person more charitable than the miser. There is a reason behind that. The reason is that the miserly person donates all his wealth even without touching it with his own hands. Which means that when the miser dies, all his wealth is automatically taken away by others. He could have voluntarily given that wealth through his own hands to somebody. And he could have earned the piety of giving it to somebody. But he is such a charitable person, it's a sarcastic comment, such a charitable person that he gives all his wealth to others, even without touching that wealth with his own hands. So, as far as material wealth is concerned, when we have the opportunity, we should give wealth to those who are deserving. Who are deserving people in society for our excess wealth? So, people who are poor, animals who are helpless, and those who are brahmanas, who are performing the task of educating the society in Vedic Shastras. So these three are ideal candidates for giving charity. People who are poor, animals who are helpless, and brahmanas who are teaching the society. So these people are ideal for giving charity. So as long as we are having wealth, we should give charity. But if we ever see a miserly person, we should remember Bhavananda's verse. Vichayani, Vicharyani, Vichintyani, Punah Punah. Again and again, the miser does three activities. Collect new money, reserve that money, and expand that money. Similarly, O Lord, may we do the same with your holy names. May we become a complete miser as far as collecting your holy names is concerned. This is a very sweet verse by Sri Bhavananda. I will read the translation. The translation is as follows. O Lord, just as a miser continually collects, counts, remembers his money, in the same way let us continually collect, count, remember your holy names. A very nice verse. We will move ahead to the next verse. This is Shri Yadavendra Puri Padanam Anushtu. Srila Rupa Goswami has collected a verse from a previous devotee author named Shri Yadavendra Puri. He has written a verse in the meter Anushtu. So, this verse is related to Moksha Anadar. Moksha Anadar means disregarding impersonal liberation. So, many times people who become spiritualists are attracted towards this idea of moksha or impersonal liberation. And this moksha means one thinks that when I will become perfect, I will become one with the absolute reality which is present everywhere known as Brahman. So this spiritualist, he has no idea of what is the most advanced stage of spiritual life, which is bhakti. Actually, Krishna has declared in Bhagavad Gita himself, Bhaktya mam abhijanati, yavan yascha asmi tatvatah. If one wants to know me tatvatah, in actuality, who I am, bhaktya mam abhijanati. One can only know through bhakti or devotional service. But there are people who do not agree to this principle of bhakti yoga and want to instead become one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Becoming one means they think we will lose our identity in Brahman. Who is Brahman? Brahman has no characteristics. Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. Just present everywhere. It's the impersonal feature of the Lord which is present everywhere. Brahman is present within you, within me, between us. Brahman has permeated all aspects of our existence. And Brahman has no characteristics according to them. They have no characteristics. So, they want to become one with this Brahman because as long as they think we will be an individual spirit soul, we will have to accept the body. And if we have to accept a body, then it means that we will be in distress. In order to avoid all distress, it is better to finish one's existence, individual existence, and merge with Brahman. This is simple philosophy which they are following. They have no idea that Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that the living entity is Sanatana, my eternal fragment. If the living entity is an eternal fragment of Krishna, Krishna has said Sanatana, it means how can the living entity stop becoming an eternal fragment and again become one with the Supreme Absolute Truth? If they become one with the Supreme Absolute Truth, then this statement in Bhagavad Gita, Sanatana, will prove to be false actually. So, what Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita, Mamai Vamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, they are my eternal fragmented part, so they will remain eternal. Somebody who attains impersonal liberation, they falsely think that I have become one with the Supreme Absolute. Actually, they are still fragments. Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan explains, just as a green-colored parrot may enter into a green-colored forest, similarly, the impersonalist falsely thinks that I have become one with the Supreme Absolute Truth. And just as the green-colored parrot never becomes one with the green-colored forest, similarly, the impersonalist does not actually become one, because the spirit soul is eternally a fragment of the Supreme Lord. Sri Yadavendra Puri knows this fact. Instead, he has spent his entire life becoming a devotee of Lord Krishna. So Sri Yadavendra Puri has composed a verse in the meter Anushtup. I will chant this verse, same meter as the previous verse. So those of us who know the meter, kindly chant along with me. Nanda Nandana Kaishora Leela Pritamahambhudhau Nimagnaram Kimasmakam Nirvana Lavanamrata. Sri Yadavendra Puri says, Nanda Nandana Kaishora Leela Pritamahambhudhau. Nanda Nandana, the son of Nanda Maharaj is Lord Krishna. Nanda Nandana. Kaishora. Kaishora means he is youth. Kishore Avastha is Kaishora, is youth. Leela, his youth pastimes. So Nanda Nandana Kaishora Leela, which means the youthful pastimes of the son of Nanda Maharaj. Especially he is referring to the pastimes that Krishna performed with the gopis of Vrindavan. He says, Leela Amrita. It is like transcendental nectar. Maha Ambudhav. And this transcendental nectar is not just in a small cup of, you know, it is not contained in a small cup. It is Ambudhav. It is a big ocean of nectar. He says, Nimagnanam. We drowned in that ocean. We completely drowned in that ocean. And this was a sweet ocean, completely sweet ocean. He says, Kim asmakam, now what do we have to do with Nirvana Lavana Ambhasa? Lavana means salt, Ambhasa means ocean. What do we have to do with that salty ocean of impersonal liberation? It's a rhetorical question. What do we have to do with that salty ocean of impersonal liberation? We don't want that. We are already drowned in the waves of that nectarian ocean of the youthful pastimes of the son of Nanda Maharaj in Vrindavan. We have nothing to do with this salt water of impersonal liberation. This salt water of impersonal liberation may be very immense, it may appear very formidable, but it does not do any favor on us. Even if we are standing in front of it, we cannot even drink even a single, you know, cup of water from that ocean of impersonal liberation. So what do we have to do with that? If we become one with that impersonal Brahman, how will we enjoy sweet pastimes of interaction with the Supreme Personality of God? For interactions, there has to be adan pradan. There has to be give and take. For give and take cannot be with one person. Give and take has to be with between two entities. Therefore, it is called as bhakti ras. Rasyate iti rasa. It flows, therefore it is called as rasa. When something flows, it means there has to be a source and a destination. But if source and destination get merged into one, how can anything flow? So, in order for something to flow, in order for there to be rasa, there has to be a source and destination. Or what is technically known as ashray and vishay. So, unless there are ashray of rasa and vishay of rasa, there cannot be flow of rasa. Rasa is mellow or flavor which flows from the heart of Bhagavan to the heart of devotee, and from the heart of devotee to the heart of Bhagavan. For this, both Bhagavan and devotee have to be two separate individuals. If they get merged into one, then they cannot enjoy rasa. There is no question. Moreover, the impersonalists very prominently say that the impersonal Brahman has no characteristic whatsoever. It has no attributes. It has only one attribute. It is Sat, Chit, means it exists. That's it. Its only prominent attribute is that it exists. It is. That is what is its attribute. So, it has no attributes, so to speak. If it has no attributes, how can it have the attribute of enjoyment? How can it enjoy? If Brahman cannot enjoy, then how can Brahman exchange rasa? If Brahman cannot exchange rasa, it means that a devotee will never prefer this type of liberation. So Sri Yadavendra Puripad has made his argument. We will move ahead to the next verse. It is Shri Sarvagyasya Shardula Vikriditam. So Shri Sarvagya has bought a very nice verse in front of us. He says, devotees do not consider any riches to be or any great thing in the world to be anything significant. For devotees, everything in the world is ultimately insignificant. Let me put it in this way. No matter how much enjoyment is presented in front of a devotee is somehow incapable of material enjoyment. There is one reason, not because the devotee cannot enjoy, not because the devotee has some bodily problem. So the devotee is incapable of material enjoyment. The devotee is mentally incapable of enjoying that material object. Once a person becomes a devotee, they automatically develop a sense of renunciation. Some may develop slightly greater, some may develop slightly lesser. But more or less, they are coming to the same point. Sooner or later, it is not a matter of now effort. It is simply a matter of time. It is simply a matter of time before the devotee is going to become fully renounced in their life. Because Srimad Bhagavatam says, Janayatyashu vairagyam jnanam cha yad ahaitukam. This bhakti generates two spontaneous qualities, jnan and vairagya. Jnan means knowledge about the Supreme Lord, and vairagya means spontaneous detachment. The devotee doesn't have to try very hard for detachment. A simple absorption in the taste of bhakti will produce immense amount of detachment in the world. And Sri Sarvagya has brought a verse in front of us which specifies how devotees see everything to be very insignificant. So this verse is in a meter named Shardul Vikriditam. This meter is the same as the Shad Goswami Ashtakam. Most of us might be knowing how to sing Shad Goswami Ashtakam. I will sing this verse. Kindly sing along with me. Tvadbhaktah saritam patim chulukavas khadyotavad bhaskaram merum pashashinurukavad kimaparam bhumeh patim brityavad chintarat Nachayam Shilansha Kalava Kalpa Druham Kashava संसारं तृणरं जीवस्तिमपरं देहं निजं भारवः। श्री सर्वज्ञ सेज टू द लॉर्ड, ओ डियर लॉर्ड, प्लीज डोंट इवन ट्राई टू प्रेजेंट मटेरियल एंजॉयमेंट टू योर डिवोट, डोंट इवन ट्राई। Sometimes Krishna tries to give some material enjoyment to the devotee. So Sri Sarvagya says, please don't try. It is useless. There is a greater power dominating the devotee's heart. That is Bhakti Devi. So anything is presented by you in front of the devotee as material enjoyment, it is going to be useless. Why? Tuad Bhaktaha, O Lord, your devotees, Saritam Patim, Sarit means river, and Saritam Pati is the lord of all the rivers, which is the ocean. So ocean is considered to be the lord of all the rivers, because all rivers surrender unto the ocean ultimately. So ocean is lord of all the rivers. Saritam Pati, Swad Bhakta, O dear Lord, your devotees see Saritam Pati, the ocean. How do they see? Chulukavat. They see it as one fistful of water. They don't see it to be greater than that. It's useless. Why does he say Chulukavat? Many people in the world are interested in going to the beach. They like to see the ocean. But if you ask the devotees, would you like to go to the beach? And the devotee thinks it is just water. But you say, what is the difference between, you know, this water and that water? Water is flowing from the tap. Water is flowing in the ocean. Saritam Patim, even a very beautiful thing like going to the ocean, devotee thinks Chulukavat. Yeah, useless pile of water. Khadyotavat Bhaskaram. And Bhaskaram, they see the sun to be Khadyotavat, like a glowworm, as insignificant as a glowworm. Somebody says, oh, do you want to go see the beautiful sunset? Do you want to go and see the beautiful sunrise? The devotee knows sunrise and sunset are meant for devotional activities. The devotee goes and sees sunrise and sunset. Devotee thinks, what did I get today? I wasted my time. Why? Because I went and saw the sunset. What a great waste of time. Vanity. Spending time in vanity. So, Khadyotavat. You know, what is the sun? The sun is like glow for them as insignificant. Merum Pashyati. Now, if Meru Parvat, if an entire, this is Meru Parvat, is the biggest mountain in the universe. It is made out of gold. If he sees Merum Pashyati, Loshtravat, he sees as insignificant as a tiny pebble. Some tiny a clot of earth. Loshtravat. Why? Devotee has no inherent attraction for money. Devotee may have money with them, but they don't have that attraction for money. Why? Because they know that whatever money is being given to them is given by Krishna. That is, devotee's firm resolve in human form of life. Whatever money is given, that money is given by Krishna. Krishna will give more. The materialistic person thinks very differently. I have to earn money. This is materialistic person's way of life. And devotee simply says, I have to do my duty. Money will come automatically. That is the devotee's point. This is the difference between the devotee's point of view and the materialist point of view. Devotee thinks, I have been given some prescribed duties in this human form of life. I just execute it, Krishna will give money. And materialist thinks, I have to go and snatch money from the material world. This is the materialist point of view. And the devotee knows there are 84 lakh species of life, out of which maybe there are few thousand are human beings. Now, besides these few thousand human beings, all other species of life don't think about earning money. We look at all species of life, insects, reptiles, birds, trees, animals, even demigods, Lord Brahma. They don't think about earning money. They don't have this fire burning in their heart. Today I have to go to office and earn money. Only in human form of life does that foolish person think, today I have to go and earn money. They don't understand that all other species of life don't have this anxiety. Why do they not have? All other species of life have this inherent understanding in them that somehow food will come. There will be food kept somewhere, we just have to put some effort and get that food. That's it. Nothing else. So, and all other species of life learn how to survive on bare minimum. Except for human beings. So in the animal kingdom, we don't see stylishly dressed cheetah. All cheetahs are cheetahs, basically. They are no stylish cheetahs. Or we don't see stylishly dressed birds. The bird is carrying a Gucci bag. You know? That we don't see. Why? Because they have learned one simple thing. Whatever Krishna gives, that we will accept. As soon as the devotee learns this fact, whatever Krishna gives, I will accept. So, Merum Pashyati Loshtravat. Even if a big Meru Parvat or big Meru mountain of gold is brought in front of them, they will see it as a clump of earth and stones, nothing else. Kim aparam, what to say more? Bhumehe patim bhrityavat. Bhumehe pati, Bhumipati is king. A king is known as Bhumipati because he is the lord of a certain tract of earth. Bhrityavat, they see him as a servant. They see him as somebody who is fit to be instructed. Many times, yes, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there was this devotee, Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat, he was carrying Rahugan on a palanquin. Although Jad Bharat was becoming Bhritya, servant of Rahugan, in his mind, Jad Bharat knew that I am only the servant of the Supreme Personality of God. And when Rahugan insulted him at that time, Jad Bharat started speaking words of wisdom to him. And when Jad Bharat spoke, actually Jad Bharat had taken a vow he will not utter anything in his life. But seeing that this king is fit to be instructed, Jad Bharat started speaking. And he instructed Jad Bharat, he instructed Rahugan as a master instructs a disciple. So even a king, we don't have anything to ask from the king. Nothing. If a king comes in front of us and says, what do you want? So we will say, we don't want anything. We want that you should listen to what Krishna has to say. That is what we want. Even if devotees go and meet the president of the United States, and the president of the United States asks the devotee, what do you want? The devotee will not say, give me a duplex apartment, you know, somewhere. The devotee will say, please take this Bhagavad Gita and read it completely so that you will be benefited. This is what the devotee wants from the president of the United States. So, Bhume Patim Bhrityavat. Why? They see everybody as servant. What to speak of the king? Everybody they see as servant. King is also a servant of Krishna. So, Bhume Patim Bhrityavat. Chinta Ratna Chayam. Chinta Ratna is Chinta Mani, or what is known as Philosopher's Stone. Chayam means collection. Somebody gives a big collection of Chinta Mani or Philosopher's Stone. This Philosopher's Stone, if it touches any metal, that metal turns into gold. They see it as Shila Shakalavat, nothing but stones. And this is seen in the story of Sanatan Goswami. Mm-hmm. Sanatan Goswami actually had one Chintamani with him. He threw it in the dustbin. What will Sanatan Goswami do with Chintamani? If Sanatan Goswami takes Chintamani and converts something to gold, then there will be people visiting Sanatan Goswami every day. Mm-hmm. And people will be asking Sanatan Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, my daughter is about to get married. I need some money. I have heard you are a great sadhu. Huh? Why don't you give me something? So Sanatan Goswami knows it is only a disturbance to one's bhajan. There is a story of Sanatan Goswami incident when Sanatan Goswami ran from jail. He was such an expert minister and he wanted to give up his ministerial duties. And the king, Nawab Hussain Shah, he put Sanatan Goswami in jail. Sanatan Goswami bribed the jail keeper and ran away one day. And Sanatan Goswami ran from Bengal to Jagannath Puri. On his way, Sanatan Goswami was having a personal servant with him. A personal servant accompanied Sanatan Goswami. One night they stayed in a restroom. And this personal servant was carrying 8 gold coins. Now the restroom owner somehow came to know that this servant is carrying 8 gold coins. So in his mind he is thinking, if I kill both of them, maybe, you know, who knows this Sanatan Goswami is carrying how many coins? His servant is carrying 8 gold coins. If I kill both of them, who knows, in the dead of the night in this forest, who will come to know? Sanatan Goswami was such an expert face reader and such an expert minister. When he looked at the person's behavior, he came to know. So Sanatan Goswami upfront asked the restroom manager, "Dear brother, are you in need of money? Do you want some?" "Yes, yes, why not?" Sanatan Goswami took all the coins from his servant and gave it to this restroom manager. "I know you are in need of money, poor man, no problem. You take it. I give it to you as an unconditional donation." Unconditional. The restroom manager said, "Thank you so much. Actually, you are my brother." So he, Sanatan Goswami, "Yes, yes, definitely. I am your brother." Still the servant hid one gold coin with him. So Sanatan Goswami later found out this servant is holding one gold coin. Sanatan Goswami said, "Because of you, you know, we will die over this one gold coin somewhere." Sanatan Goswami intelligently thought what to do. He sent his servant somewhere on the pretext of getting something. And when the servant was gone, Sanatan Goswami ran away alone to Jagannath Puri without any servant. Only with Kantimala, with Kopin, and in his hands he is chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram,
Ram Ram, Hare
Hare." This is what he said. Chinta Ratana Chayam, maybe Chintamani, big stack of Chintamani, but Shila Shakala, they see a useless as collects pile of stones. Pile of stones is very heavy to carry. So this Chintamani is also very heavy to carry for them. Kalpadrumam Kashthavat. If they see Kalpadruma, Kalpadruma is Kalpa Vriksha, desire fulfilling tree. If they see Kalpa Vriksha, you go in front of Kalpa Vriksha. Kalpa Vriksha is a desire fulfilling tree. You go and ask anything. Kalpa Vriksha will immediately fulfill. Any material object you want in this world, it will fulfill. They see it as Kashtavat, wooden object. Nice wooden tree. Very nice wood. They see it as Kashtavat. You want to ask something to Kalpa Vriksha? Why do you want anything? Why? The thing in this world I want. All my desires are fulfilled already. Kashtava. For me, Kalpa Vriksha is like another ordinary wood. Samsaram Trinarashivat. This entire world is given to them. They will see it as Trinarashi, as a collection of blades of grass floating in the ocean. Trinarashivat. Kimaparam. What more to say? Deham Nijam, their own body, Bharavat, they consider it to be a burden on them. Their own body is a burden to them, material body. So this is the translation of Sarvagya's verse. I will read the translation. "O Lord, your devotee sees the king of rivers, that is the ocean, as a handful of water. He sees the sun as a firefly or glowworm. Mount Meru he sees as a clump of earth. He sees the emperor of the world as a servant. He sees a multitude of Chintamani, philosopher's stones, jewels as simply pebbles. He sees a valuable Kalpa Vriksha tree as mere stick or wood. He sees the entire world as a bunch of straw and he sees his own body only as a big bird." So this is the natural detachment of the devotee. So we will move ahead to the next verse. This is by Sri Madhavendra Puri Pada. Srila Rupa Goswami says, "Sri Madhavendra Puri Pada Nam Shardul Vikriditam." So this is by Sri Madhavendra Puri, and he has used Padanam. In Padanam, he has used plural case. Previously also, he has used plural case in many places. For example, in Sri Yadavendra Puri Padanam, previously he has said. So Padanam is plural case. Plural case means, in Sanskrit it is said Adararthi Bahuvachanam, for giving respect to somebody, instead of calling out his name in singular case, his name is called out in plural case. In Hindi also, sometimes Hindi language, instead of saying tumne kya kiya, we give respect by saying aapne kya kiya. So it's like some, therefore in Sanskrit, in order to denote respect, we use plural case. So this plural case is used. Madhavendra Puri Padanam Shardul Vikriditam. This is Madhavendra Puri's verse. It is composed in the same meter as the previous verse, Shardul Vikriditam. So Shri Madhavendra Puri Pad says that he is born as in a perfectly Brahmanical family. He has learned all the rules and rituals of being a Brahmana. After learning all these rules and rituals of being a Brahmana, suddenly one fine day he has become a great devotee of the Lord. And after becoming a great devotee of the Lord, all these rules and regulations of Brahmanical life are now gradually becoming a burden upon him. So after these rules and regulations are becoming a burden upon him, one day he thought, what is the use of following all these rules and regulations of Brahmanical life? They are given in the Vedas, that is true. But they have a specific purpose. Their purpose is that they ensure that we become free of all sinful reactions. That is the purpose. So Sri Madhavendra Puri thinks, if I have a better way of getting purified from all sinful reactions, why should I try to, you know, do whatever these Vedas are giving, elaborate rituals? These elaborate rituals are coming in the way of my bhajan. So Sri Madhavendra Puri composes a verse. Now, we should remember, he is a very spontaneous devotee of the Lord. A spontaneous devotee means he has achieved a very deep feeling of I and mine towards Krishna. That is the meaning of spontaneous devotee. Those who have not attained this deep feeling of I and mine towards Krishna, they are still bound to follow the rules and regulations of Shastra. So this verse is an utterance by a spontaneous devotee. So we can relish his mood, but at the same time we should understand that we can also come to this mood only if we have a very strong sense of I and mine towards Krishna. So I will utter this verse. Those devotees who know how to sing this verse, it's the same as previous verse, kindly sing along with me.
सन्ध्यावन्दनभद्रमस्तु भवतो भोस्तानतुभ्यं नमो भो देवापितरश्च तर्पणविधौ नाहं क्षमः क्षम्यताम् यत्र क्वापि निषद्य यादवकुलो तं सत्यकं सद्विषा स्मारस्मारमहं हरामि तद्दलं मन्ये किं मन्ये न मे.
वेरी नाइस मीटर, अ सिंगल रेपिटेशन एट दी एंड. मन्ये किं मन्ये न मे, इट्स कॉल्ड एज चेक अनुप्रास, सिंगल रेपिटेशन. तो इसे संध्या वंदन. Oh, Sandhya Vandan. Sandhya Vandan is three times chanting the mantra given to us by the Guru, thrice a day. Like Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Dhyayam Suvam Stasya Yashas Three Sandhya. Three Sandhya means three times Sandhya. What is the meaning of the term Sandhya? So, in Sanskrit, there is a term called as Sandhi. Sandhi means joint. In our body, there are various joints. For example, this elbow is a joint. The Sandhi means joint. Sometimes we hear the term Sandhivat. Sandhivat means problems of the joints. So Sandhi is joint. So every day has three joints. The joint between the night and morning is the first joint. The joint between morning and afternoon is the second joint, and the joint between afternoon and evening is the third joint. These are the three joints or three sandhyas. These three sandhyas are technically known as Gayatri, Savitri, Saraswati. These are the three names of the three sandhyas. Sandhya is a lady. In Sanskrit, sandhya is striling or feminine gender. So there are three presiding deities of the three sandhyas: Gayatri Devi, Savitri Devi, Saraswati Devi. But since Gayatri is the first, therefore prominently we say, I am chanting Gayatri. As that is what devotees say. So one should say, I am honoring Gayatri, I am honoring Savitri, I am honoring Saraswati during the three times. But commonly it is said, I am honoring Gayatri. So we do Sandhya Vandan. Sandhya Vandan means during the Sandhya or during the three joints, we are doing Vandan or we are offering various mantras of glorification to various deities. The first mantra, when people get second initiation, the first mantra they are offered is called as Brahma Gayatri. This Brahma Gayatri is a worship of Lord Surya Narayan. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, it is a worship of Lord Narayan who resides within the Surya Mandal, within the orb of the sun. So, but traditionally Gayatri has various other meanings. It may have meaning which is not related to Krishna. So Madhavendra Puri says, taking the traditional meaning, Sandhya Vandana Bhadramastu. Oh, Sandhya Vandana. Oh, dear worship of three Sandhyas, Bhadramastu. May all auspiciousness be to you. But now I am not interested so much. Bhavato. May all good be unto you. But I am not so much interested in performing you at this point of time. Bho snan. Oh snan. Snan means taking bath. Thrice a day. Tubhyam namo. All glories to you. All obeisances to you. Once a day is enough for me. Bho devah pitarascha. Oh devtas. And O Pitras, O forefathers, O demigods and O forefathers, every day I am supposed to offer tarpan. Tarpan means oblations to you. I am supposed to offer water to you, to the forefathers and to the dead or to the demigods. Tarpan vidhau na aham kshamah. I am not capable now. Kshamah means capable. Na aham kshamah. I am not capable. Kshamyatam. Please forgive me. Please forgive me, now I am no longer capable of doing this. So what are you doing, Madhavendra Puri Sahib? If you are not respecting Sandhya Vandan, if you are not respecting thrice a day bath, if you are not offering oblations to the devatas and to the pitris, you are not carrying out any of the prescribed duties of the Vedas. And by not carrying out any of the prescribed duties of the Vedas, that is, there is something known as pratyavaya. Pratyavaya means negative reaction will ensue. So Madhavendra Puri says, I am not worried. Let any negative reaction come. He says, yatra kva api nishadya. Kva api nishadya. I will sit anywhere, in any corner of the world. I don't even have to worry about proper direction. Because when we chant Sandhya, or when we are worshipping the three Sandhyas, we have to face the same direction as the sun. When the sun is rising in the east, in the morning, we have to face the east and chant the first Sandhya. But he says, yatra kvapi nishadya. Now, sitting anywhere in the world, in any direction. Yadava kulottam sasya kamsa dvisha. Now, sitting anywhere, I remember the biggest decoration of the Yadav clan. Who is he? That is Lord Krishna. Kamsa Dvisha, the enemy of Kamsa. I simply remember. Smaram, smaram. Again and again I remember. Agham and all the sins, harami, I will immediately destroy. simply by his remembrance. Tadalam, that is sufficient. Manye kim anye nami. Tadalam manye. I consider this to be sufficient. Kim anye nami. What need do I have for anything else? What need do I have? I have no need for anything else in this world. All the rituals of the elaborate Vedas. I will do something basic, but I can't do all those elaborate things. Sitting anywhere in any corner of the world, I will simply remember Lord Krishna. And by that simple remembrance of Krishna, all negativities that ensue from not following Vedic rules, they will be immediately driven away. So that is Sri Madhavendra Puri Pada's realization. Now, even Madhavendra Puri Pada is saying this, we should understand that all these Vedic rituals are meant for those who are born in a Brahmana family, those who are second initiated. Those who are second initiated are supposed to follow chant three Sandhya or Sandhya at three times a day. So, for Madhavendra Puri, it has naturally become a burden. He is not doing it because of his laziness. He is not escaping because of his laziness. It has naturally become a burden for him. Since it has naturally become a burden for him, therefore he is saying, now enough. I am more interested in, thinking about Lord Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also describes a similar thing. He says a devotee becomes more advanced when he gives more priority to Krishna Katha. He gives an example of this. He says a devotee who is on the path of Raganuga Bhakti, he or she may sometimes skip certain rules of Vaidhi Bhakti. And he gives the same example. He says, for example, a devotee is sitting in a class where beautiful Krishna Katha is being discussed. And now suddenly Sandhya arrives. And devotee has two options now. Either the devotee can get up from the class, go somewhere, chant Sandhya and come back. This is the first option. Second option is devotee can continue to sit in the class and continue hearing and remembering of Lord Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the devotee on the platform of Raganuga Bhakti decides, ki Baba, I will sit in the class. If he sit in the class, then negative reaction is going to come to you. So that is what is going to happen. But he says, smaram smaram agham harami tadalam manye. For me, simply remembrance of Krishna is sufficient. There is also a verse in 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Sanketyam parihasyam va soham helanam eva va Vaikuntha nama grahanam Asheshag haram vidhu. Sanketyam. Somebody chants simply to indicate something else. Like Ajamil was chanting to indicate his son. So somebody chants to indicate some other object besides the Lord. Parihasyam. Somebody chants out of jokingly. Oh, this Hare Krishna. Stobham helanam eva. Somebody chants with inattention. Or somebody chants even to disrespect the holy name. But Vaikuntha Nama Grahanam, it is the name of Lord Vishnu. Ashesh Agharam, it can drive away infinite quantities of sins. Vidhu, this is understood. So, similarly, Madhavendra Puri Pada knows this after reading Srimad Bhagavatam. That chanting the holy names of Krishna can drive away any negativities that come. So, one should not extend this and say that I will now commit new negativities and then chant Krishna's names. That somebody may say, now I will commit sinful activities and then chant Krishna's names and then smaram, smaram, agham, haram. That remembering Krishna, I will, remove all those things. No. These are negativities which are coming out of not following something positive. Then there are negativities which come out of doing something negative. There is a difference between these two. These negativities are those which are coming out of not following the positive injunctions. And then there are some negativities which come because we perform some negative activity. If we perform some negative activity and we are thinking in our mind that by chanting Krishna's names and remembering him, I will drive it away. Then it is one of the offenses towards the holy. To commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So that is not being indicated here. Okay. Okay, so dear devotees, this was our Padyavali session. We discussed some verses today. I think we are half the way through. And tomorrow we can continue discussing these verses. Now, if there is any devotee who wants to ask any questions or give any comments, they can please do so. And I'll try to answer to the best of my capacity.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. Thank you for this, for drowning us in this wonderful nectar, as you always say. You made us totally drunk. Thank you so much. Prabhuji, I have one question, and this is about this usage of Kamsa Dvisha. And I'm trying to connect it to one of the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna is the Lord of Vaikuntha is referred as Madhu Dvisha. And in the commentary or in the literal meaning there, it was told that he is the one who envies Madhu. And then, of course, Prabhupada was explaining about that in detail, about the Lord having envy is not mixed with the passion and ignorance. Rather, it is on the level of pure goodness. So my question there was, what is envy in general? We understand is that when we don't have something and when we want something from someone who has it, right? So that is, and you go and you try to take it. So that is the idea of envy. So I understand the point that dvisha, when we say the word dvisha or enmity or envy in that sense, means for Krishna, it is definitely not mixed with a mode of passion and ignorance. But my question there is, what is there for Krishna to want? In the sense, when the demon Madhu took away, rather the Vedas, took away, what is there for Krishna to envy? You know, what he is the one who, or he is the origin of everything, right? So in that sense, where does this dvesha come? Dvisha, the word dvisha term, come. Same thing with Kamsa. So why specifically that the word is used? Like, what is there lacking in Krishna for him to go and take it? That's my question.
Okay. So your question is that here the term Kamsa Dvisha is used. The term Kamsa Dvisha comes from the term Kamsa Dvit. And Kamsa Dvit is a Sanskrit term. Dvit is a in Sanskrit, it is called quip pratyaya. Quip pratyaya means it is formed simply by the verbal root dvit. And Kamsa Dvisha means he who is envious of Krishna. That is Kamsa Dvit. Somebody who is envious of Krishna, of Kamsa. So your question is, if he has everything, why should he be envious of anything or anybody? Now, we should understand what is the meaning of the term dvesha. Dvesha means envy. Envy is often described as parotkarshasya asahanam, intolerance of the greatness of somebody else. That is what is known as envy. This is precisely how envy is described. Intolerance of the greatness of someone else is described as envy. So Krishna, Srila Rupa Goswami has said in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that there are 18 major faults in all human beings. For example, kama, lust, krodha, anger. Then he says, one of the things he says is dvesha. Dvesha means envy. Jiva Goswami in the commentary starts specifying how most of these faults are also transcendentally present in Krishna. So Jiva Goswami says how one of the faults was tandra, sleep. he takes a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which specifies how Krishna was also sleeping one time. So Jiva Goswami in the commentary specifies that these 18 faults which are present in a human being are also transcendentally present in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Because he has taken a personality. When we take a personality, we should take the personality in its entirety. It is Naralila. Naralila means it is pastime as a human being. A human being goes through various emotions. He cries, he sleeps, he becomes envious of somebody. Now, if we say that Krishna appeared as a human being, but Krishna did not perform all the activities of a human being, then can it be said that God is complete? God is complete when he appears in all forms and executes all activities of all the forms. That is God's completeness. So God doesn't mean that he will keep himself away from certain aspects of humane nature. Previously, when he has appeared as Nar and Narayana, they are completely non-envious. Like, you know, even if Kamadev comes and dances in front of them, they will say to Kamadev, "What do you want? Are you happy? Take one apsara from our side." Huh? Take from our side one apsara. What is the problem? Okay, Kamadev also, they are not envious of somebody who is coming to hurt them. Take something from our side, if you are interested. So this is non-enviousness, basically. So that is present in Krishna. But for Nar-lila, and I am saying Nar-lila means humane pastimes, they have to execute Nar-lakshana. Nar-lakshana means characteristic of human beings. That is one very important thing. That is the completeness of God. So when Krishna exhibits these transcendental faults within his character, these transcendental faults are what leads to the completeness of his Godhead. That is how I can put it in technical words. So he is complete because he also includes all divine imperfections. That is his completeness. And unless both perfections and imperfections are simultaneously harmonized in the personality of Godhead, how can he be fully complete? For him to be fully complete, both perfections and imperfections have to be simultaneously present as well as harmonized in his body. So Narsimha Tapani Upanishad says, Ugram Anugram, he is Ugra, fierce as well as Anugra, not fierce. Viram Aviram, he is Veer, brave at the same time, not brave. Jwalantam Ajwalantam, he is blazing at the same time, he is cool. Sarvatomukham Asarvatomukham, his faces are everywhere, yet his faces are not everywhere. So this is simultaneously opposite, contradictory qualities harmonized in one personality. That is only possible with Bhagavan. So he is simultaneously envious and non-envious. Where do we know that he is not envious? He says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti. No, I am envious to nobody, na priya, nor is anybody very dear to me. Name dveshyosti and here is a kamsa dvisha. Both of them are going against each other actually. How is it possible that on in Bhagavad Gita you say I am not envious of anybody, and then devotees describe you as Kamsa Dvesha? For purpose of Naralila, he becomes envious of Kamsa. Although he is from an absolute point of view, he cannot be envious of anybody. Because envy basically means para utkarsha asahanam, the non-tolerance of the greatness of somebody else. But that is not from an absolute point of view, nobody is greater than him. For a Leela point of view, definitely. Kansa has attained some greatness, so Krishna becomes intolerant of Kamsa's greatness. So that is the explanation.
Very nice, Prabhuji. Thank you. That was actually a very nice detailed explanation. Thanks for that help. I really liked when you were talking about the idea of flowing rasa. There should be ashraya and vishaya, otherwise there cannot be any flow without source and end. That was very beautiful, and Prabhuji, thank you so much. And I just wanted to add one thing that I heard since we were discussing about water in the palm, how the devotee is only after the water in the palm rather than the huge ocean. So once during Indradyumna Maharaj's Vyas Puja in ISKCON of Silicon Valley, I don't know who made this comment. Was it Vaisheshika Prabhu or it was Indradyumna Maharaj in relationship to Vaisheshika Prabhu? I don't know exactly how the comment was made, but this was the comment. He told that the ocean that we see is like the Lord who's there in Vaikuntha, and the rains that we get now and then is like the incarnations of the Lord that appear now and then, but the